Atlantis is finally on its way. NATCA may have succeeded in costing Bobby Sturgill his job. And airline merger mania is in the blocks waiting for the starting gun. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, February 8, 2008. A big weight was lifted from the shoulders of NASA mission managers on Thursday when the shuttle Atlantis finally lifted off at 2:45 p.m. Eastern Time. Despite 3 months of delays due mainly to troublesome fuel level sensors, the launch was described as flawless. Despite earlier forecasts offering only a 30% chance, an incoming cold front over the Cape held off just long enough to leave clear skies for the afternoon launch window. NASA astronaut Steve Frick commands a crew of six, including pilot Alan Poindexter and mission specialists Leland Melvin, Rex Walheim, Stanley Love, and the European Space Agency's Hans Schlegel and Leopold Ehrhartz. This is the first spaceflight for Poindexter, Love, and Melvin. Their prime objective is to attach the European Space Agency's Columbus Laboratory to the International Space Station, adding to the station's size and capabilities. Expedition 16 flight engineer Daniel Tanney, who arrived at the station aboard Discovery in October, will return to Earth with the Atlantis crew as Ehrhartz takes his place on the station. Bobby Sturgill is a highly respected former airline captain, naval aviator, and Top Gun instructor, and his nomination to succeed Marion Blakey as FAA administrator was supported by commercial and general aviation groups almost universally. So why did the first day of his Senate confirmation hearings end in a procedural maneuver by two senators to block his confirmation, possibly permanently? Well, a prediction made by Reason Foundation Transportation Studies Director Bob Poole in the January 23rd Aero News special feature appears to have come to pass. Poole said that the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, frustrated by the FAA's refusal to return to the bargaining table on one hand and its inability to legally call a strike on the other, would rally the support of unions in general and union-friendly lawmakers in particular to retaliate by denying Sturgill the job. The Associated Press reports that Thursday afternoon, Democrats Robert Menendez and Frank Lautenberg of New Jersey used a procedural hold to prevent a vote on the issue from reaching the Senate floor. Lautenberg explained, quote, "It's time for President Bush to nominate an administrator who solves transportation problems rather than creating more of them," unquote. Both senators mentioned the ongoing dispute with controllers and the noise impacts of FAA airspace changes over the Northeast in their decisions. The result is that instead of Senate confirmation and a five-year contract to head the FAA, Sturgill will continue in a caretaker capacity, possibly until the next presidential administration nominates somebody else. On the merger mania gossip line, the Wall Street Journal now reports that Delta and Northwest Airlines have come to terms on what roles existing executives would play in a combined airline and are expected to announce a merger sometime next week. The anonymous insiders leaking word to the Journal say chances are slim that the few remaining issues will derail the merger. United, meanwhile, which was once mentioned as another possible partner for Delta, has moved on and is reported to be in talks with Continental. One industry source says the two airlines want to announce their own merger as soon as possible after Delta and Northwest and send the two mergers through Department of Justice scrutiny at the same time. Any antitrust concerns could be small potatoes compared to the task of getting mergers past employee unions. It looks as though we'll have plenty to report for the rest of February. Life terms were handed down this week to three Indian men found guilty in the hijacking of an Indian Airlines Airbus A300 to Afghanistan. 10 people had been accused of involvement in the hijacking of Indian Airlines Flight 814 on December 24, 1999. 179 passengers and 11 crew members were held hostage for a week. One passenger died of knife wounds. The hostages were ultimately released in an exchange with the Indian government for three pro-Kashmir Islamic rebels. The three men sentenced have been in custody for 8 years. 7 more suspects remain at large. Up next on ANN, Alaska Airlines stays low-key in dealing with 737 flap issues. Airlines start looking for ways to bring back retired pilots. And the maker of the world's cheapest car will also make parts for the Dreamliner. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for February 8, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Alaska Airlines, which has had flap deployment issues with three of its Boeing 737s during January, will not be required by the FAA to make any changes to its fleet. The planes in question are 737-400s called Combis, planes which have had special adaptations to allow configuring them for either passengers or cargo. Three of the 400 series Combis had flaps fail to fully extend during landings due to a problem that was traced to the housing of the machinery which deploys the flaps. Alaska says removing the door covering the mechanism eliminates any possibility of the problem occurring, so for now, all 40 of the affected planes will be flown that way. The relatively casual handling of the problem had raised some eyebrows, since in all four affected landings, the pilots declared emergencies. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer reports that that was a precaution taken because the higher-than-normal landing speeds required to land with partial flaps left less margin for overrun on runways. There were no injuries or property damage in any of those landings. Airline spokesman Paul McElroy said Alaska was not required to notify FAA or the NTSB, but both were notified after first word of the story hit the newspaper last month. Boeing has also been alerted. Alaska says fleet-wide inspections by both the airline and Boeing will continue until all 40 planes have been examined. When Congress passed the facetiously titled Fair Treatment for Experienced Pilots Act, it extended the mandatory airline pilot retirement age from 60 to 65, but it also threw a bone to the unions and said that if pilots already retired but not yet 65 were brought back to work, they'd have to start over at the bottom of their profession. That provision meant that mainline airline captains with decades of experience and six-figure incomes would have to come back as bottom-rung first officers on regional jets, making $22,000 a year or something like that. The unions, which sold these guys out, apparently figured the disincentive would be extreme enough to keep them from coming back, maintaining upward mobility for younger pilots who had many more years to pay dues. But Boeing estimates the industry is going to need 18,000 pilots a year for the foreseeable future. So it was probably only a matter of time before supply and demand prompted airlines to see if there was some way to get these experienced veterans back on the job. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram reports now that a number of carriers, including Dallas-based Southwest, have started trying to bring retired pilots back. So why would a retired pilot do that? For many, pensions gutted by bankruptcies are one big reason. Kit Darby, a pilot and president of consulting firm AIR Incorporated, observes, quote, many of these pilots are living on just 25 to 30% of what they thought they were going to have. So they're a needy group, and some of them are going to jump at the chance to go back to flying. Every airline is looking at this right now, unquote. Southwest spokesperson Brandy King says her airline has about 200 retirees who might qualify, but she doesn't know how many will be interested. Quote, obviously some of them are enjoying their retirement and don't want to go back to work, unquote. If they do come back, wouldn't you love to be a fly in the wall when the unions hit them up for dues? Could delays in the development of the 787 Dreamliner have an upside for Boeing? In comments to Cowan & Company's Aerospace Defense Conference this week, Boeing Commercial Airplanes President Scott Carson said he has, quote, great confidence that the airplane will be ready to go as we've scheduled it. We have taken advantage of the delays to make sure our system-level maturity is coming along at a rate that will avoid problems as we enter flight test, unquote. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer reports Carson offered few details and acknowledged that delays have irked suppliers who have large investments in different components of the 787. Some of them are still waiting for payment. But Carson added several production delays were the fault of some of those suppliers. The current shortage of fasteners industry-wide hasn't helped much either. As for the downside of the delays, Boeing has not commented on any price concessions made to early customers who won't get their planes when promised. The first 787 was originally supposed to be delivered in May of this year to All Nippon Airways. That's now not going to happen until sometime in 2009. Boeing announced on Wednesday that TAL Manufacturing Solutions Limited of India, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of Tata Motors Limited, has been signed to manufacture structural components for the Dreamliner. TAL will build floor beams using new technology with advanced titanium and composite materials. Financial terms of the agreement were not disclosed. The beams will be built at TAL's plant in Nagpur, India, then transported to Boeing partners in Japan, Italy, and the U.S. for assembly. Tata Motors made worldwide news last month when it introduced the Tata Nano, a 10-foot-long four-door sedan which will have a base price in India of about 120,000 rupees, or a little over $3,000 U.S. Still ahead, EAA is looking for 150 young women who want their start in aviation. NASA's 2008 CAFE Challenge refocuses on light sport aircraft. And NASA partners with a Florida high school for experiments in weightlessness. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, February 8, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. Inspiring young women to reach for their dreams in aviation is again the mission of EAA's 4th Annual Women Soar, You Soar event, scheduled for July 28th and 29th at the EAA Aviation Center in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Registrations are now being accepted from young women entering grades 9 through 12 in the fall of 2008. Through the event's introduction of aviation-based careers and a women mentor network, the program encourages and supports these women to consider careers in aviation. During the first 3 years of the program, hundreds of teenage girls have benefited from the experiences and guidance of women actively involved in the world of flight. This year, Women Soar, You Soar will host activities including flight simulation, workshops, wing rib assembly, and mentor sessions. The cost is just $50 for participants. EAA notes that space in the program is limited to 150 participants. You can get more information at eaa.org, on the phone toll-free at 1-800-236-1025, or from the link at the bottom of the print version of the story on our website at aero-news.net. The folks at the CAFE Foundation told ANN this week a $1,000 early bird discount is being offered to teams registering for NASA's 2008 General Aviation Technology Challenge by February 14th. The 2007 event, which was aimed at providing an incentive for development for personal air vehicles that we'd one day use like cars, awarded $300,000 to three teams in competitions for short takeoff, efficiency, handling, low noise, and best overall. Enthusiasts expecting to see radical new technology demonstrators at the 2007 event were left scratching their heads. All the challenges were won by teams flying a slightly modified Pipistrel motor glider, a Vans RV4, and a Cessna 172. This August's event has shifted its focus to advancements in light sport aircraft. NASA says all LSA teams, both factory and private, competing this year should get details and register as soon as possible. This year's event will award another $300,000 for winners in areas including safety, short takeoff, best angle of climb, quietest LSA, and quietest cabin. NASA says it has selected South Plantation High School of Plantation, Florida, to fly a student-designed experiment aboard the agency's reduced-gravity aircraft called the Weightless Wonder. South Plantation will join 13 other NASA Explorer School teams selected to test science and math concepts in a weightless laboratory this month. The modified McDonnell Douglas DC-9 jetliner will fly 32 parabolic maneuvers. Each climb will produce about 30 seconds of hypergravity, ranging from 1.8 to 2 Gs. When the DC-9 noses over, Each free fall will produce 18 to 25 seconds of weightlessness. Rob LaSalvia, program manager, says the object is to equip the next generation of explorers. Quote, "These flights are an illustration of how NASA can connect space, math, and science to classrooms on Earth," unquote. There is now a total of 200 school teams representing all 50 states, the District of Columbia, the Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico. And finally, it's been a month since the bid deadline passed in the U.S. Air Force's KCX aerial tanker contract sweepstakes. Boeing has proposed the Air Force buy its KC-767 tanker, based on the 767 airliner. A Northrop Grumman Eads consortium has pitched the larger KC-30, based on the Airbus A330 airliner. Once the deadline passed, the bidding rules required the competitors to end any direct sales pitches to the Air Force. But that hasn't stopped the two bidders from placing ads where decision makers are likely to see them and attempting to cast aspersions on each other's products. The Boeing design is smaller, less expensive to buy, burns less fuel, and is more closely aligned with the rough and short field performance the Air Force demanded in its request for proposal. The Airbus is bigger, more expensive, but offers more flexibility in medevac, cargo, and troop transport duties. Boeing has portrayed the KC-30 as being on the portly side and calls its own plane right-sized. Northrop Eads has mocked Boeing for taking 5 years to conduct its first successful night refueling, creating a mongrel from parts of several 767 family models, and being late on deliveries of tankers to Japan and Italy. The stakes are high. The contract's worth at least $40 billion to the winner. So, if they can't lobby the Air Force directly, how are the manufacturers getting their messages out? Well, you name it. Email blasts to editors of publications, ads on Washington area radio stations, full-page ads in newspapers, including Capitol Hill media such as The Hill, and even ads on the sides of buses and subway cars in Washington. In fact, you can't possibly imagine how bombarded by ads and junk mail people around the nation's capital feel right now. Unless that is, you were a registered voter in a Super Tuesday state last week. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Adam Smith of the Experimental Aircraft Association. We'll talk about what's coming to Air Venture Oshkosh 2008. That list already includes Virgin Galactic's new models, NASA's 50th anniversary, and maybe even a flight by UAVs. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Have a clear and unlimited day.